welcome allies to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So a little bit of Mercury quirkiness here. So this is Skookum Radio. We are calmly gathering our wits that we be connected to the spirits and completely competent for the work at hand. In a moment, I will welcome political strategist for good, longtime ally Patricia Ewing, reporting in from the field, Pennsylvania, that we may gather our wits, settle our souls in order to align with the Phoenix's song that reminds us of us all of what's really important, mutual aid, symbiosis, ingenuity, applied kindness, Saturn realms of infrastructure, applied dedication to collective well-being. So just a brief little choreography. I have the Carolingian nine steps out of the underworld, which is all participatory. So we are at the dark of the moon, when, you know, people gather to determine the course of culture. Today is the Jupiter-Pluto conjunction. It is the Phoenix's song to arise from the smoldering cauldron that we all engage in wafting beauty out into group mind to remind us all of what's truly important. That's number two. Number three, Mars is stationing direct Friday the 13th tomorrow and says, I am available to animate the desirable Phoenix's song, whatever we proffer, personal and collective. Number four, there's a new moon late Saturday or Sunday at 23 plus Scorpio, which is Terrence McKenna's birthday son. Happy birthday, lad. Its image is giving a sermon on a mount. And we remember from Neil Douglas Klotz that what comes to us as blessed are the meek are blessed are those who soften emotional rigidity within their hearts, for they shall have all the power of nature. Then number five, November 19th, Mercury's out of its shadow. It's the date of the Gettysburg Address. It's Joe Biden's solar return. Venus is on Kamala Harris's sun, whose image is a person in deep gloom, unnoticed. A glowing circle of angels surrounds them. That's all of us. There we go. When we're alone, it can get spooky. When we gather like now, we're the glowing circle of angels. It is the date of the Gettysburg Address. The government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from this earth. And Abe Lincoln chiming in as well. Number six, the Electoral College convenes December 14th on a solar eclipse, of course, right? 23 plus Sagittarius, whose image is the bluebird of happiness perched on a gate of a little cottage. That's Nelson Mandela's rising sign. We want to invoke truth and reconciliation. Number seven, the winter solstice, the birth of the trickster redeemer in all of our hearts. It is the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction setting the template for the next 20 years. It happens at zero Aquarius. We're electing community, all of our relations. Number eight, January 5th, the Georgia Senate runoff, Ossoff and Warnock. Phenomenal victory would be a grand trickster move. And number nine is our palindromic inauguration, 1202021. There we go. So welcome, Pat.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, goody. All right. So yes, that's right. It's working. It's working.
Yay. So,
yeah, very good. So, yes, and Pat Ewing, reporting in from Biden, Pennsylvania field efforts, was Marianne Williamson's campaign manager, was Gore's deputy chief of staff. We go, okay. So, yeah, we've had many great backstage conversations, you know, about what shall we ladle out of this cauldron, right? And so first, maybe we want to, you know, calm everyone down. You're so calm. People are going, oh my God, the coup. Oh my God, the thing. Oh my God, the thing. However you want to settle us down, what might be a good place to start acknowledging the danger and composting it.
Sure. Well, I think we're being asked right now to, and I will get into the danger, but we're being asked right now to think about what is community. And what are we willing to do to create positive community? And why I start there is we're in an interim period where, you know, you have a president, you have Trump, who is really trying to do his shenanigans, trying to small and petty ways. And it's not going to work if we're looking at something larger. So the more that we focus on ourselves and our communities and what we need to do to heal the divisions created, not created, they weren't created by Trump. They were exacerbated by Trump. So his right. artful genius in being able to put his finger in the most painful spots of our culture and really press down hard to create the divisions, that's over. So then how do we heal from that? How do we move forward? How do we take care of each other when we don't even know if we like each other? So those sorts of ideas and those sorts of comments will help us get us through this interim time. Could Trump do something crazy? Sure, absolutely. I'm not sure he's going to, mainly because he is going to become more and more disinterested with the job he has. He doesn't stay where he's not wanted, and he truly doesn't stay where he's not beloved. So now that he's getting opposition to his chaotic reign and in taking over a White House that is meant for the government of the people, he will, I believe, become less and less interested in it. Yes, there are folks that he may pull in that could want to do some crazy stuff, but if you'll notice, I mean, he's been checked all along the way, and I think he'll continue to be checked. I think that's why you also see Biden as being calm about this, about the and what they're trying to project, because we have a very small window to heal a country from a devastating pandemic, to make government work again where people actually have a way to coalesce, understand, feel that they're part of something that's bigger than them, not their entire lives, but a piece of their lives. And to show, and if we can have a functioning federal government, especially with a pandemic or something like infrastructure, which we can talk about, it'll allow us to calm down the rhetoric so we think, okay, something's working. You know, I was listening to a mayor, the mayor of Tulsa, Oklahoma, who's a Republican, talking today, where he was so horrified and upset with the decisions that his hospitals have to make as they are filled with COVID patients and the kind of decisions they have to make of, okay, unless you're about to die, you can't get in a hospital. So being able to solve some of those things, and then the next solution, the next thing we need to solve is reaching out within our own country to those who are sitting potentially at your dining room table or should be if there was no COVID for Thanksgiving or a holiday coming up, and having real conversation. Because we, again, Trump's genius and division has sown its roots, and it's going to be up to us to help facilitate some sort of set of transference of some sort of set of how we bring people back together again. And having right. those sort of intimate conversations is something in the next 6 months is just going to become paramount.
Yeah. And just to kind of reanimate and, let me calmly describe the metaphor before us, you know. So it was my friend Jim Lewis in 1981, great astrologer, who said Jupiter, Pluto, incredible for publicity, especially if they're resonant in somebody's chart, like Pat Ewing's. And I thought that was quirky. But Jupiter is storytelling. Pluto is death and rebirth. Its primary totem is the phoenix. And the phoenix, before it bursts into flames and is reborn, sings this hauntingly beautiful song, and all of creation stops what they're doing, right, all of the fighting and inveigling and division, and listens to the unifying beauty of the song, of what's really important, beauty and kindness and art and mutual aid and reciprocity and ingenuity and humans humbly cooperating with nature's guiding genius, right? And then the phoenix bursts into flames and is reborn. So finding that, we go, okay, publicity, we could say, but the opportunity for all of us to direct collective attention And as you say, in a micro way, you know, and what shall we toss into this cauldron of ashes from which the phoenix arises? And yeah, inveigled into polarity, it's very easy. It's very easy. We put our standards there. You know, just today on Facebook, there was a little bit of, I posted a provocative thing about how Van Morrison has become kind of a, you know, anti-mask, COVID's a thing, whatever. Anyway, it aroused a huge kind of rah-rah, and it's like, I didn't mean for that to inveigle us into polarity. So we're all humbled, right? I think, you know, and then in our own family, you know, as you say, we might be talking to. But yeah, inveigled into polarity, into the cauldron. But it is a great, you know, initiation challenge, right? Because we all have our little spot of reactivity. And we want to calm that down. And that's why I think whatever you're going to say.
No, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, you know, whatever. That's why I find, you know, the guiding story so kind of like, when I venture into, you know, the normal world of all of its conflicts of social media, I can feel fear, like, oh my God, look at what he's doing, and oh my God, and the thing, and the coup index is coming up, and the horrible, you know, and then I go, no, remember, we've been working with this choreography. It doesn't even begin to settle till the 19th, you know, when Mercury emerges from its shadow, and it's a very beautiful chart, and it is the Gettysburg Address, and it's like, right, we have all these things, and everybody, you know, regardless, you know, what is the story with which we want to cooperate? You know, and so we get thrown off track, and then hands back on tiller, going easy, there we go. So, and also, you know, just reaffirming our dedication to collective well-being. And as we've been speaking, you know, to, we're on the front lines of dissolving the front lines. And part of that is language. Part of it is language, you know, so even the language of, oh, the country's so divided, or all these sides. And it's like, let's throw sides and division into the cauldron and ladle out, you know, trickster against all odds is available, the unifying story. And just to repeat John Michael Greer's invaluable counsel, he said, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict and heat, convince them they're on one side of something, and you will only get heat and fighting. What two needs is three, which is the unifying story. Here we all are.
Oh, you know, and we don't have to participate in the world that Trump creates, right? We don't have to participate in, you know, the pain that he illumined, that he discussed, is real. There, you know, white men, basically, their life expectancy is less. You know, Chappelle was right on SNL. And because of heroin addiction, because of suicide, and those are studies that have been around since 2008, since the collapse of since the Great Recession. So the pain that Trump tried to divide us on, I'm going to use that word purposefully, mm-hmm. He did so based on something that needs to be healed. And that is an opportunity right now. And I want to go back to what you were saying just really quickly on, you know, what's going to save us from Trump not going too far, like pulling out troops of Afghanistan or bombing somebody or whatever, is actually the two Georgia elections. Because in January, it's going to determine the U.S. Senate. And that is all Mitch McConnell cares about. And if Trump blows it and starts creating problems, including, you're going to see more and more Republican senators demanding that Biden gets his due, or at least gets some, you know, gets to have briefings, or gets inside some of these government agencies to put his people in there. They're going to start demanding that, because it makes this Republican Senate look bad in Georgia during the elections. So the where we won't see it, I won't see it on the outside, on the inside. Well, if Trump can keep any of his staff safe from COVID, that would be a start. But if what will happen is because of those two Senate races, if Trump acts up too much, it can be a detriment to those races. And the Republican Senate will not allow that to happen. So they're right now, Trump does have guardrails. He does have guardrails. Even though he's he is thinking by himself in his room, whatever, you know, chatting about how he's going to have 85 million more legal, you know, statutes going after every vote, all of that. There's never been an election. In order to overturn an election, it has to be under 500 votes. That is statistically true. There are not even real lawyers who will take a case that's over 500 votes because it statistically just can't happen. So this election's not being overturned. Trump's going to find himself more and more constrained, not in his verbiage, but in his actions, literally just because Mitch McConnell will not allow him to lose the Senate for him.
So can we then address and compost a concern about the Electoral College convening on December 14th and the, you know, Kenneth Starr and all those people saying, you know, the states can send in their own electors. How shall we compost?
Actually, that's that? Not legal. That's actually not legal. They can't. So The states have decided, this is in law. I mean, you can actually prosecute somebody who goes to a convention, the convention, and represents somebody that they weren't elected to represent. It's actually not true. So, and my point is Trump's actions in this Republican, again, it's a great opportunity to keep Trump in line. Again, Mitch McConnell will not look what he did this fall. He put Amy Coney Barrett on the bench in the most phenomenal, just power grab way he possibly could. Just to help Lindsey Graham, because Lindsey Graham was even in South Carolina. He has this entire show of a Supreme Court justice just to show that the Republican Senate was doing something, just to remind people why you need a Republican Senate, and it worked. He will do anything to keep his power. That's going to keep Trump in check. Our job is to win those two seats so that Mitch McConnell is in the minority. That is key. But I would say that Mitch will keep him in line.
Okay, and I just want to clarify what you said, too, which is that Mitch McConnell will not want Trump to behave too badly because that will turn off voters in Georgia? Is that what you're saying?
That'll turn off Republican voters in Georgia. Because one of the things the Republicans are concerned about in Georgia is that with Trump saying, number one, Trump saying over and over, the votes don't count, the votes don't count. So why are they going to vote again if the votes don't count? So they're trying to get Trump to stop saying that. So number two, The crazier right now Trump acts when he's no longer in power and he starts doing all these crazy things, that's more suburban women wanting to vote for the Democrat. Trump's not on the ballot, number three. That brings down the vote totals for Republicans anyway, because when they came out in Georgia, they came out for him. So number four, he's probably not going to campaign in Georgia, right? I can't see him having a rally in Georgia right now unless he really gets his emotional act together, because I don't know if he could stand that right now. So, yes.
Okay.
Trump doing something on the international stage that where he bombs a country will actually turn off voters, Republican voters. They either won't show up or they will get scared and they will vote for the Democrat. So he doesn't want Mitch McConnell doesn't want too much consternation going on while they're trying to win this Republican race for them, where they get both the Republican candidates in office. And then, go ahead.
So, Michael Cohen saying he thought that Trump would go to Mar-a-Lago for Christmas and just never come back. And we go, well,
that's possible.
I was hoping for Mar-a-Lago to be, you know, immigrant family housing, but okay, that's a desirable. Remember, team, we're just opening up avenues of, you know, an offering going, this would be fun, you know. And I like somebody had suggested, you know, it's going to take a month to clean out the COVID infestation in the White House. And I go, a month before, you know, 1-2-0-2-0-2-1, our palindromic inauguration, that would be December 21st, the winter solstice. And I go, oh, it would be so darling if he were gone by December 21st, if he can pack that fast, that would be really good. And on some level, team, we could go, there you go, you're swooshing out. Because it is the birth of the trickster redeemer within all of our hearts on December 21st. It's King Arthur's birthday. And this year is notable because it is the Saturn-Jupiter conjunction on the winter solstice. It's like the backstage divine's trying to really help us out with all of these things in which to participate. It's not what's going to happen. It's like, what's available for us to play with and work with and in a desirable way. I go, okay. The John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock Georgia runoff, that would be good. And it reminds me of the trickster part of the Chiron myth. In Chiron's school, his students' tasks are impossible, and they're always successful after they study with Chiron, who's very active now in our field. And so in Chiron's mythology, to be underestimated is considered a very positive strategic value, because if you're going to pull off something desirable and good, might as well make it a surprise. There we go. So do you think the Republicans are underestimating Ossoff and Warnock?
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. Excellent.
Absolutely. I think Georgia is still Republican. There was a Republican strategist today who said, look, you know, Biden's a moderate. We get that. These two guys, Ossoff and Warnock, are just wacko liberals, and there's no way Georgia will like them or love them. That's just not going to happen. So, yes, I think that they believe that this is pretty easy. But this is why this is so important, these two elections. Right now, Mitch McConnell will not think about a Senate bill that offers more relief to Americans during COVID. So he does not, he will, first of all, his idea is he will not bring a bill to the floor ever that he can't win. That's just number one. That's why the Senate only does judgeships. That's it. That's all they do. So because he will not bring anything to the floor that he can't win. So he will not, right now he's saying that he will not have another relief package. That means no money for hospitals. That means no money for education. That means no money for, no more bump in people's unemployment benefits. So this is what this guy's able to do. Anything that Biden wants to do, he's going to have to work out with Mitch McConnell. If we win both these seats, which is a possibility because of the reasons I was just talking about, The Biden's going to have a much easier time of a big infrastructure bill, which can bring jobs, which can help our communities. He'll have a much easier time of getting Americans the help they need while COVID is going on. And what if, you know, in order for us to heal this country, we have to have a solid plan. It has to be funded. Cities and states, the cities, this poor guy, this mayor of Tulsa, Oklahoma, he's by himself. Yeah. He has no help in Oklahoma from the state. So here he is, all these people are flooding in to his hospitals from rural Oklahoma who hate masks, won't socially distance, won't wash their hands regularly. And he's now they're clogging up his hospitals because there is no rural health care in the state. But he's on his own. So these things are can be changed. These things can be solved. And in solving them, there's an opportunity to help heal our country and help start dealing with the divisions that divisions that have been sown, and for us to look at, again, people as Americans and humans, and to see each other as part of this American experiment. So,
and what was
to
the
me
thing?
That...
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
So what was the thing that I sent you backstage on a Skype chat, you know, about, you know, interesting, smart guy on Twitter saying, you know, even without the Senate, you know, Biden could initiate a relief package in which each citizen had a direct deposit from the Treasury of $1,200 or $600 every 2 weeks. No, $600 a week. That's what it was. And he said that's why it's so important who gets appointed to the Treasury. But is that a plausible thing? Can he bypass and directly replenish?
Sure. I mean, Trump did that.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Trump said everybody money. I mean, I don't think that has to do with who's in the Treasury, though. And I don't know if technically it would come directly from the federal government. It might have to go through the states, but, you know, or whatever the easiest way, because one of the issues will always be if you have to create it, it's going to take 2 extra months, right? So if that's something that needs, they're not going to break into the IRS who has everybody's bank account and say, hey, just shift the money over there. They're just not going to do that. So because that, one of the things you want in your federal government are these bright firewalls, because you really don't want your Census Department to be attached to the IRS and for them to commingle their information, right? Because that is too much power for a federal government. So the federal government itself actually does keep divisions in separate lists to keep us safer and keep our privacy stronger. So whether it's directly from Treasury, the Treasury Department head, sure, would have a say in that, but it'd probably become from Biden himself. And I honestly think if it got to that point, it would be a complete screw up on the side of Mitch McConnell, but it could happen. It could absolutely happen. So, yes, he can do it, but he can't do it like when they had the CARES Act, where it was week after week after week after week. I don't know how much he can actually spend money that's not from Congress and not enacted from Congress.
Okay, we're going to come back to that after a very short break music, but it's a Phoenix's song, right, for all of us to gather our wits and feel beauty. It's from the fantastic movie Black Orpheus, just a little bit of this haunting beauty that we see arising out of this cauldron, and we'll be right back after this break for beauty. Here we go. Maybe. Could be. Possibly. Don't know. Music. Nah. Mm-hmm. Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our more than skookum guest is Patricia Ewing. And that was just a little Phoenix's song, the beauty come out from the fantastic movie, holds up so well, Black Orpheus, a deeply magic movie, just to remind us of the bigger picture, the larger mythological embrace, you know, and beauty arising up out of this. And we go, excellent, excellent. So, yeah, so back to you, Pat, with beauty arising out of our cauldron, the Phoenix's song going, there you go, calm all hearts and all inveigling into polarity to find unifying story that can lead us forward. And the guiding and the practical application of these things. So you know you've been delineating the infrastructure right here, team. This is good for everybody. Do you want to since whatever we bring up now, Mars direct, the part of us, the heroic part of us, is eager to animate. So the infrastructure project that you see as plausible that we could all lend on. Yeah, that would be great.
I've got, and I'm going to do a little bit of a preamble to it, which is, and so that you understand how I'm thinking about it, which is, and it, this is not a non sequitur, but HRC, Human Rights Campaign, and other organizations finally got gay marriage passed is the way that they did it in their messaging over years was to bring to people's attention those people in their own family who were gay and in love and wanted to get married. And instead of saying, this is a civil right, or this is a right, or this is, and banging on people to say, hey, you know, let us into the Constitution. What they did is say your sister is a lesbian or your uncle is gay, and they bring home to, and your family is opposed to it, but they bring their lover who, you know, to Thanksgiving dinner or to something in the house. And that place where you have all of a sudden you realize this is love. This is important. They should have all the rights. They should be able to go into a hospital and, you know, declare that you are the spouse, you are the person who can make decisions for their partner. So that's where they went. And I think that's important to do now, where we are reaching out, and this is stuff we can do. We are reaching out to those people in our community, those people in our family, and starting to have conversations again that might have been too polarized under Trump, but now it's important and on us who didn't support this guy to reach out and to start those conversations. And I was using gay marriage as an example of success, where it actually changed one family at a time, changed the entire dynamic about how we see marriage in this country. Unbelievably successful. With that, in the infrastructure idea, is a solid infrastructure bill could do some of the same thing in helping to heal us by offering good jobs, helping our communities with solar, with wind, with better roads and bridges that aren't going to fall down. It also offers a skill of labor that we haven't emphasized in a long time. And we could, because not everyone is going to college. So you're offering those who may feel as disaffected from this culture, from this society, who feel put upon, who are easy to be grabbed by some authoritarian government, and you're offering them training, you're offering them jobs, you're offering them a way to see themselves as a positive member of the community. And so a solidly good infrastructure bill right now could, again, putting people back to work, create these cross communications, help for people to see that the government itself is not an answer, but used effectively by and for the people, can wield a lever that brings more people into it so that we can, you know, move away from what Trump has tried to work us through. Because one of the things I learned out of this whole Trump piece is that if Trump read a book and he was actually smart, we'd be in a lot more trouble. Because we're seeing here the weaknesses in our culture vis-a-vis our democracy. And we need to some healing to do on our culture itself so that it does not take down our democracy. And again, we have there is a part of our country that is disposed to sort of this authoritarian, you know, interestingly, you're talking about Arthur, and I'm using the word authoritarian, but, you know, bent. And the more that we can build that to where they feel that they have a say and a piece in the overall culture and even government, I think can make us more resilient to potentially a smarter, more well-read, more charismatic, and, you know, Trump in the future.
Right. And it's the great Bob Marley line. You don't have no work to do. We got some work for you. You know, again, right. What you're animating for us is inviting the best so that we know, you know, that mob mind has been generated by the con, right? And, you know, giving permission to kind of the worst aspects of our nature, of our polarized, our vituperative nature. And what you're saying is sort of, so ignore that, dissolve that, solve a coagula. Here's the larger story. We want to invite the best of everybody. You know, we do. We have work to do, and inviting the best of humans and the ornery and creatively, you know, disobedient part of the American spirit. We can do this thing. And you did say a thing in one of our conversations that, you know, Biden is the guy that we didn't know we needed, right? I mean, many of us were like, oh,
yeah, no, my line is the man, Biden is the president we need that we didn't know we needed. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so we compost our own harumphitude going, no, he's really stepping up. You know, again, you know, yes, we can maintain our critiques and our wariness and all of that, you know, and there we go. With the, here we go. This is the thing. Because he's been remarkably non-reactive, but responsive in a pretty calm, steady way under a high level of provocation, right? I mean, he's been, and he did go to Gettysburg, and he did say those lines, the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from this earth. And then we add, but shall put its roots down ever deeper and its branches spiraling into, you know, in perpetuity. So we're all befoibled, right? And certainly politicians, but we're drawing on the best of everybody. Come on over here. There we go. Who brought what? So ladling out of this cauldron, and as you say, inviting the skill of labor and inviting everybody's got a role. And if there can be relief, you know, relief, the person I was looking at Twitter said, the Senate's good, but Biden can do 95% of Build Back Better even without the Senate. You're saying maybe not. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation was an executive order, right?
Right.
You know, so there are, you know, you can do a lot with executive orders. And given how many Trump did, I think you're going to see Biden come out of the jump with a bunch of executive orders, right? And he's going to right the wrongs on immigration that Trump created. You know, there's a lot of things, yes, that he can do. But you need a functioning Senate. I mean, you still need a functioning Senate. You don't have to have people love you. You don't even have to have people in your own party, you know, tweet away, you know, disparage. It's just, you know, if you got a comment to make, make it. But it has to function. And right now, our U.S. Senate does not function. And so it has, you know, there are three branches of government, and we're getting to a point where we don't even know if our Supreme Court's going to function anymore, right? So right. These levers of government have to function. That doesn't mean agreement, but it does mean compromise. And it's not compromise itself is not a bad word, and it's one of the things I'm looking forward to seeing how Biden does, because, you know, there is only one piece of legislation at the end of the day. It has to be signed exactly in the House and the Senate. So the House has to be written exactly as the Senate passes it, the House passes it, and exactly as the president signs it. So there aren't, at the end of the day, you know, 535 versions of that, right? There's one version for each piece of legislation, and that means compromise. That means give and take. And that art form is what helped keeps our country strong. So it is an art form, and yes, you can be beholden to this. You can do it both ways. You can use compromise as a cop-out, but you can also use stridency as a cop-out. You know, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to hold on to my position, and nobody, you know, nothing else is going to happen unless I get my way. Well, you know, right. That's a cop out too, because you're not creating something bigger, so or better potentially. So we need to see some level of competency in our U.S. Senate. We need to see the House itself actually is passing legislation with Democrats and Republicans all the time. None of it gets taken to the Senate. None of it gets taken up in the Senate. None of it. So there needs to be a competent U.S. Senate. And nobody's expecting, I would never expect, nor do I think it's healthy, for different parts of even the Democratic Party to agree on everything. But there is going to need to be some sort of sense of quick action from my standpoint on Biden's part to set some big agenda items that then we get behind. And, you know, and COVID, obviously. And, you know, to me, something like infrastructure could be really healing for the country to bring back a lot of the Trump folks, and also help our country as well. You know, help everyone, really. So there's going right. to need to be that. And then the American people also stepping up to listen to each other and to reach out, not against party lines, but, you know, to different people in their community to see if we can understand each other. And that starts really at the kitchen table, because we all have that uncle. We all have that aunt. We all have that sister who you're like, you voted for who? Are you kidding me? And having that level of conversation with why and listening is a way to move through all of this.
Right. And, you know, and Greta Thunberg had a fierce, appropriately fierce article in The Guardian, too, going, this is a crisis, the climate crisis, the earth is a crisis, you know. And it sort of left open, yes, if we can have an effect address the COVID as a crisis as it is, you know, as you've said, you know, Biden coming into this is a far greater crisis than 08. You know, it's like, whoo-hoo, cascading misery. But if we can get our muscles toned to actually craft, you know, a structural response that is good for everybody, then we're getting our crisis response muscles toned as a collectivity, and to address the climate as what it is, which is a crisis, right?
Yes, climate has to be, you know, we have to address that as well, and we have to be behind addressing it. So it's and part of it is, any piece of legislation needs to include, like, you can't have an infrastructure bill without dealing with, you know, right. how it affects the climate. It goes hand in hand. So you can actually put in something like that, you know, again, solar and wind and changing over energy grids to, you know, to move away from fossil fuels. I mean, I think we need to hold what Biden said about getting us off fossil fuels. And, you know, over a period of time. And, you know, so all of that is going to also be vital.
Right. And moving up the time frame. I mean, Greta was good. As she said, when people talk about 10 years, 20 years, it's like, that's easy for people to say, how about now? What are we going to do now? Right. And to pull that back in. And again, that it's not something being imposed on the populace. It's something being invited that stirs that all of us on some level know, what's up and the work at hand. And you'd made also some great points too about now that the media no longer primarily has Trump as its stirring up polarity, it will feed itself by stirring up conflict, like, and the language is annoying too, going, oh, and the Democrats are just having a food fight. It's like, no, just stop that. They're having a conversation. But it goes back to, Jerry Mander's ancient book. Hi there, Jerry. Something about television being the devil. But it makes the point that, film is reflected light, kind of lunar. TV is guns pointing out at you. So it's best at presenting conflict and contrast. So it feeds on that, and we want to just be unsnookerable, going, no, we will not be provoked into vituperative polarity. We will acknowledge everything, but not, well, especially into these. Well, let me toss it to you, because it's not exactly, there are real disagreements, right? And it was the Abigail Spanbauer thing, going, you cannot say socialism and you cannot say defund the police, which was unfortunate phrasing, right? We might want to.
Very unfortunate. It's always an unfortunate phrasing when it doesn't mean what it says.
Right.
I mean, no one who defund the police actually means no more money for police, right? What someone meant by it was helping police departments to have social workers or first responders who could help ameliorate a problem, because, and then potentially a police officer coming in at the end if it's really needed, or some sort of set of support for them. But that's not what defund the police, if you read it and you just see it, it's not what it means. So from a marketing perspective, it's a bad phrase.
Right.
So it just doesn't mean what it says it's trying to say.
Right.
And that's always, then you're completely behind the eight ball.
Right. And so for all of us, again, language crafting, because it was the answer that you gave when I said, what's up with white women increasing their vote for Trump? And you said, it's that phrase, defund the police.
It's the phrase. It's absolutely that phrase. Absolutely.
Because what you reference is actually going on. Like Bill de Blasio just implemented a social working project in New York, in which mental health calls go to the social worker first, or what they've had in Oregon, CAHOOTS, I forgot what it stands for, but it's older hippies and police showing up together, and it's been in place for some years, and the police really like it. And it's that idea of going, no, we're redefining, well, for all of us, it's a Saturn deal, defining what is wise leadership, defining what is desirable governance.
There are communities all over this country, small, rural, mid-size, who already do this.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're asking a police officer is trained for the highest level of alert. They've got a gun strapped to their belt. They are taught that they could be dead at any moment. They're in, thriving in fear potentially if they're not trained well. And you're asking them to go into the most sensitive, painful part of someone's life without any training. So there are communities and rural communities all over this country that send a social worker in first, or at least go with one if there's a domestic abuse situation, or if there is something that they, feel that's needed. And you know what? They bring crime down and they bring assaults down. So it doesn't even, when you think about it, it's one of those things you go, oh, of course, that makes complete sense. But the phrase itself was an unfortunate phrase.
Right.
It just was unfortunate.
Rededicate. Well, yeah, and it's we understand, and then it's cooking everything back to its clarity, to its what it's really calling for. Absolutely, and acknowledging the horror and the Black Lives Matter as a crucial point. Going, oh, yes, all of this up for. But, which is why when we were talking also, too, I love that the meeting of the Electoral College on December 14th on a solar eclipse. The solar eclipse is 23 plus Sagittarius, which is Nelson Mandela's rising sign. The bluebird of happiness perched on the gate of a little cottage, which, again, I love that that's Nelson Mandela's rising sign, because even in prison, 27 years with a life sentence, he knew he was going to be happy. And he knew that his work, why he was polite to the guards who were torturing him, that his destiny, the weird that he was to dree, was to negotiate with, you know, people who had been thugs and murderers in order for the greater good of the country. And I always remember my South African friend Ishmael, as we sat on top of Table Mountain, and he said, the amazing miracle of Nelson emerging, not bitter. You know, the whole nation was waiting and watching and going, he's not bitter. No, no.
Right.
And Ishmael told me that we were going to vote for the first time, you know, he'd been ANC. And he said, we thought we were going to be machine gunned at the polls, but we were going to vote anyway. I'm like, come on, Americans, right? You know, the importance there. So we've been talking also about the truth and reconciliation, you know, the realm of storytelling, and you're bringing into the family dynamic, and the always useful evergreen Br'er Rabbit may preside over Thanksgiving. You know, there was times when all the critters used to gather to sagacuate, just like there ain't been no hard times, like there ain't been no falling out, like they all remembered they were family, right? So this country, right, is born July 4th, you know, it's a Cancer. Cancer's a Scorpio and a house coat, says J.H. Jacobs. And so there's the demonic part of that, you know, which is why Mary Trump's book, Too Much and Never Enough, is such a brilliant title for the neurotic part of this country. And her family, or the Trump family virus, you know, connected to the collective thing in the way that, so families, and then the horror of this country separating babies and children from their families, right? And all of that weaving back together. So the antidote is exactly what you're saying, you know, sacraments of kinship. And it comes back to,
right.
You know, what's a...
Well, yeah, and it comes, but yeah. I want to say that I think we as individuals have a place here, right? Because a lot of what we were talking about are these big projects that have to come, even relief has to come from Washington, D.C. But there are things we can do in our own community now to help seed a gentler, kinder way to talk with each other. Because, you know, and I just want to add this before we go, which is, you know, the countries like Russia who tried to sow such division, they're not going away, right? So I would like to look at some of what we see online, realizing that we're still being manipulated and that it isn't, you know, AOC is talking smack about this person or that. I mean, you don't know, right? You don't know whether those things are really happening right now, and you know, some of that online division is gonna continue. So we need to be even more careful as we move forward.
And then just for the fun of it, to bring in at the end, but these are ongoing conversations around the table, around the spiritual table. You know, what has given rise to so much delusion, and I think of it as the tyranny virus, and, you know, that has infected so many of our fellow citizens, right? And especially in the alleged spiritual community, going, what is that? And coming back to this, you know, dogma. Anytime there's dogma, one is open to infection by the tyranny virus of some kind, you know, polarity, reptile people, and whatever. Anyway, so we composed all of that, right, and laid out the opposite of dogma, I suppose, is, heresy, right, free thinking agents, and I go back to believe nothing, entertain possibilities, because if we believe something, even if it's the truth, it's still outsourcing our Saturn that we so want to insource now, and I give it to you for the last word or the last blessing in our final 30 seconds. Whatever.
Well,
whatever
I think this has been a wonderful conversation, and I think that there's a lot of ideas on the table, and the people that are listening and your fans actually have a lot of great ideas themselves. And those, it's time for us to put those ideas to use and in our communities, in order, because we have this opportunity right now, this very defined time period of ability to change things from in a positive direction. And we don't have to complete it. We just have to shift it. So doing what all of us can do to change what has been a pretty tumultuous 4 years for a lot of us, just even watching this, to change to be more positive can actually switch the trajectory of how we move forward as a country.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Patricia Ewing, a lifelong ally, wonderful Skookum agent. Thank you so much, Kirsten Thomas and Jose as well, for being Skookum board ops. I'm Caroline Casey, and we will reconvene next week as Mercury emerges from its shadow. And it's getting good at us. Woof, woof, woof. Thank you.